Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
It is Friday. Joining me is the man, the myth, the legend, Uncle Mountain himself, Pete Kimball Holmes. What is up, my friend?
Good morning, Marines everywhere. I'm doing fine, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. You never call me Mike. What's going on? What's new? You got to give us an update on your Super Bowl, not so much who you chose, but who do you think's going to win? We got to do that today, and then we can talk about food a little bit. So you and your buddy Disco tend to wager on things like this. So talk to me about what's going on.
Well, Disco is from the Bay Area.
Oh.
And so he picked the 49ers. So I'm stuck with Kansas City, which is not a bad team to be stuck with.
No, so if you got to be stuck with somebody, they're Kansas City pretty good. I mean, they've blown out.
I don't think anybody's going to get blown out. I think it's going to be a really close game, 1 to 3 points close.
Oh, really?
I think whoever has the ball last.
What's the point spread on it right now?
I think it's under 7. I don't know what the point spread is.
And
but
Kansas City favored, yes.
Yeah, KC is favored, but not by much.
All right, now when you and he bet on the Super Bowl, do you bet straight up? Do you bet the points, or how does that work?
Well, we have about 25 side bets. Who wins a coin toss? Most receptions, most rushing touchdowns. You know, right. On and on. Most penalties, most interceptions, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
But straight up is the bet. I'm taking Kansas City to win. He's taking San Francisco to win.
So no points. You know, that whole betting thing, stuff, all those little side wagers started in England, right? Where you can, you could bet on anything, right?
Yes, you can.
What color hat the queen was going to wear to, the whatever horse race, right? You could bet on anything in there. And it's so that's where, if you're wondering where all those bets came from,
quite frankly, they're as much fun as the game.
Oh, that's been turned into it's not just betting on the game. It's betting of all the little side wagers in the game that have become huge business. I was reading where in the next 5 years, most states will legalize gambling on sports.
I think so.
Right. And given the rise of online, gambling, you're seeing this very, very interesting discussion about, more and more states legalize gambling. Why allow Nevada and other states to take all that money out of your state,
That's right.
So it's kind of interesting, and especially, gambling on sports. And now, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, the NHL – all say, well, we want a piece of this. You're gambling on our product, right? You're using us as the basis for this. If we can get some love out of this, so that'll be interesting.
As if they don't have enough money.
Hey, does anybody ever have enough?
Well, yeah, some do. Most people don't, though. Most people got to have it all.
Exactly. You're tunned up, so, it's like you're insulated. So, it's like, whatever. Now, for you, here's a question. Mac, what do you and Kim feel about Megxit? Do you have any feelings on Prince Harry, who's my favorite, who does incredible stuff with the Invictus game, seems like a good dude.
Yes, he does.
Right? Do you have any thoughts on they're going to
sure
be neighbors.
Do.
They're going to be neighbors to the north. Maybe they'll settle in Winnipeg.
I hope they settle in Vancouver. It's a very cool town. It's Whistler Blackcomb is about an hour and a half in up in the mountains. All it's right. One of the great ski areas. I hope they leave them the fuck alone. I just, you know, she made the call. They fell in love. They got married. And with that comes all the royal monkey business.
Yeah.
And you better be ready for it or it's going to happen what happened to his mother. Too much paparazzi and
Diana
and not enough being able to handle that kind of pressure. I feel for him. I like Harry a lot because of what he does for charity work. Like you said, the Invictus Games and he's a stand up guy. He's got a great sense of humor. Gets taken they take a picture of him in Vegas playing pool naked. I love that shit. That's my kind of guy. He's a fun loving guy. He's been through a lot and I wish him the best. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I don't, you know, if that was a family business, I don't know that I'd be a good fit for it. Because I don't know. I mean, could you imagine that kind of scrutiny with everything you did?
Mm-mm. No, I couldn't, Mac.
Yeah, it's hard to
eat. Would you please abdicate your position?
Yeah.
If that's what they'd ask me.
Yeah.
I just thumb my nose at them.
I need you to abdicate me. Because I couldn't do this. And you've seen, like, remember Princess Margaret? She was a shit show.
Yeah.
And now, once again, what's his name? Prince Andrew?
Yeah.
Right? Now he's in the news. Right?
He's in kinky trouble.
Oh, criminal trouble is way beyond kinky. And he won't even cooperate with the investigation. He's a member of the royal family, right? And everything they stand for. So, here's another email. Mac, it's been almost a week coming up to Sunday, but is there anything that you've seen relative to Kobe Bryant's death that has got the attention of you or the chef? Kim, it's hard not to. I'll tell you what, I thought I was turning on SportsCenter last night, and during SportsCenter, they were running this movie. And what they had was they must have 15 cameras set up, and they're all following Kobe Bryant in one game. And they're playing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're playing the San Antonio Spurs. And it's just they just follow him up and down the court. They follow. He's mic'd up. They follow him on the bench. There's still shots, you know, when he does stuff. Because it was recorded, I only saw about an hour of it. So I've got to run that down. I found it really interesting, but that's not really the question. I saw that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Anything in the last week that you've seen, that's, that you found either interesting or noteworthy of some sort?
As far as Kobe goes, it's so sad. And helicopters are terrible vehicle to get around in for the simple fact that if something goes wrong, you're done. You're toast. Whereas, you know, they make a plane in Duluth, Sirius, that has a parachute that deploys.
Right.
So,
Made up by where Kim lives, by the way. That plane is made by a company. Yeah, it has a parachute that drops out of the back. So if you get, you know, something really bad happens and you got to literally pull the chute, you got one, right? You got one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. So at least you got a fighting chance. Kobe, I mean, I guess it didn't have any warning.
My buddy was shocked at that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand why a helicopter doesn't have, and they took off in fog. They couldn't see. And right away, I'd say, me being the paranoid guy that I am and the chicken shit as far as flying goes, I'd say, call the limo.
Yeah, call the limo.
and tell them we're going to be late. And have all four wheels on the ground.
Right.
That's just me.
Right.
Some guys that are, you know, people that are famous like that have tight schedules. I understand what he did, but my gosh, nine people. It's just tragic and very sad. And he was a real stud.
Right. You know. Colleen,
in many ways,
Colleen
won an Oscar for that cartoon book.
Yeah, Colleen and I were talking about him, and she's doing a speech thing, and she said, you know, I'd like to use him. I said, well, you know, just be prepared for the rebuttal's going to be, but, you know, he was a rapist. And so
Colorado.
We talked about that, and I said, let me tell you what bothers me about that. I said, and I don't know a whole lot about the case, and I'm not going to victim blame, but let me just tell you, I don't think Kobe Bryant had to rape anybody if he wanted to have sex. Okay?
Yeah, I think?
I don't know what happened, but there's nothing in that guy's before that event, life, before that event, and there's nothing in that this guy's life after that event. And I'm sure he had women throwing themselves at him all the time. And so, to me, when you judge a human being in the long arc of their life, right, you know, I don't know what happened in that hotel room in, what, Eagle Rock, Colorado, or something like that.
Yeah, it was.
If I remember. And so, but she and I were just talking about it. I said, so if you use him, I said, but when you write somebody's life, right, you got to broaden the lens. And that's included, but it's got to be included in its appropriate context. And so if we're going to look at his character, right, look at his character and look at the long arc of his character. And then and I said, but you got to be, you know, prepared to defend that. It's also interesting, you know, how people that, you know, there's somebody I think that with the Associated Press that tweeted out the links to those headlines right after that. They were suspended by.
They were fired. And then somebody.
And then another. Yeah. An ABC reporter that reported that his all four of his daughters were on board was fired.
That's what it was.
Or fired or suspended. So, but it, you know, it just goes to show how gross, you know, the media business is these days. And and again, I can make money if I can report this fast. Right. And there's no way that person could have substantiated it with anybody responsible. But, you know, when in doubt, report it and, you know, I'll get a raise and I'll become more famous. You know, I'll traffic in this kind of shit. And it's just pretty disgusting. So anyway,
I agree, man. I can't agree with you more. I just anyway.
Yeah.
Here's it's very bothersome.
Yeah, here's a pasta sauce question. Hey, Mac. Hi, Chef Kim. Good morning. Mac, ask Kim, what does he prefer, a Mariana or meat sauce? Now, if you use sauce out of a can or from scratch, what ingredients make a sauce really pop or is overlooked? Thank you.
Well, it's marinara sauce.
All right. So you prefer marinara?
That's a meatless tomato sauce.
Okay.
And I prefer a marinara sauce because you have versatility with the marinara sauce. If you can, add meat to it and simmer it for a while so the meat flavor can get into the sauce. But for a base sauce, I prefer a marinara sauce. And it's very simple sauce to make. You know, you whatever herbs you want to use, some garlic, some onions, you saute them a little bit. You add deglaze with a little red wine, and then add your tomatoes. And if you're going to add basil to the sauce, you never add basil until the very end. And the reason is, if you throw it in at the beginning with the other herbs, and the basil will get bitter. So if you want that basil flavor to pop, then you save it for maybe the last 5 minutes it's simmering, and then you throw it in. And you can either chop it or just throw it the leaves in whole. And that's a real nice finish to a sauce, and creates a good flavor profile there. That's for me. But everybody has their own sauces. Making a meat sauce, some people will take hot, sweet and hot sausage, saute it with ground beef, and saute it, then deglaze with. I always deglaze if I'm doing a pasta sauce with a little red wine, and then you know, a cup or two, and then add your tomatoes and whatever you want to add, and let it bring it to a boil, and then let it simmer. Now I'm working on a recipe for Harry's new steakhouse. And it's the straight marinara sauce, like I said, but he kind of wants meatballs for his grandchild so they can have spaghetti and meatballs. Well, with the meatballs, I'm going to do a beef and pork combination. And then I'll add my seasoning. And when you make meatballs, you take 2 cups of breadcrumbs and a cup of milk, and you pour that over the breadcrumbs and let the bread soak up that milk and makes it a mush. And then you add a couple of eggs, and that will keep your meat moist. And you don't want a real lean meat when you're making meatballs, because it'll dry them out. You know, you want a juicy meatball.
I never thought about that.
I prefer to roast them in the oven, and then finish them off in the sauce.
Your meatballs.
And the meatballs in the sauce. And then you don't want them fully cooked when you drop them in the sauce. You want them about 3/4 of the way cooked. So you're simmering your sauce there, and for about a half an hour, you simmer those meatballs in the sauce. And then you're in the front row, baby. Wow. You got a seriously good dish. But the marinara sauce is what I start with. But that's just me.
Okay.
You're a meat sauce, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, hold on. So you make yours from scratch, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Is there an ingredient that is often overlooked that you say is essential to what you do?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there is. Just before you're done, you take about, depends on how big the batch of sauce is, anywhere from a teaspoon to a tablespoon of sugar. And you throw that sugar in the sauce the last 5 minutes or so and stir it up, make it sure it dissolves. It'll dissolve, but mix it around. And the reason for that, it will take the acidity out of your sauce, and you know, you won't have acid indigestion. And it helps for you can't taste the sugar, You can if you put too damn much sugar in it. But if
but
you just
can no, you notice it.
Yeah, you notice.
Definitely
it.
Notice.
But if you just put enough in to where you change the acidity of your sauce, and nobody knows. Oh yeah, there's a lot of sugar in here. So be careful, but do add the sugar, and that would be a very important thing to do with your sauce at the end, very end.
Okay. Now you bake your meatballs. I would think that, and let me tell you one of the reasons I like that idea. You can go ahead and, again, using the meat thermometer, for those of us that don't have a calibrated thumb like Kim mm-hmm. has from years and years of doing this, right? But to me, yeah, if you think about the ways the biscotti gets screwed up. One, you know, your marinara sauce is a little bit acidy. Two, you know, the meatballs are a little bit overcooked. Now, if you've ever had really good, you know, marinara sauce, and, you know, whether people prepare sausage or meatballs and they have that separately, and that you create your own pasta concoction on your own plate, right? And they know what they're doing. It is to die for, right?
Yes.
The combination of pork and beef in a meatball, or just pork or beef, you know, you'll see people do it various ways that aren't overcooked, right? With the marinara and this pasta. Oh my God. It's the way it should be, right? It's the way it should be. So
now I've had, I went to in high school, I went to an Italian friends for dinner, and they had spaghetti. They had 100% old country, and they make their meatballs and sausage separately, and they put them on a plate, and you have a bowl of they called it gravy in the East, back in Jersey. They call their marinara sauce gravy, and you'd add them and mix them. You want sausage? You don't want sausage. You want meat? You got meat. And it was pretty cool.
And that's why they didn't make meat sauce, was that?
Yeah, that's right.
Right? When you had the big meal, right, you would have sausage. You would have meatballs, right? And some people would have it, their pasta with neither. And so
now,
that's how they did it.
Now, in Italy, if they're going to make a meat sauce, they call it a ragu.
They do.
Okay. R-A-G-U.
Just like the jar?
Yes. and that is, and they can do a rabbit ragu. They can do an oxtail ragu, a veal ragu. And that's their versions of meat sauce. However, in true form, there are no spaghetti and meatballs in Italy. There are a plate of meatballs, and then your marinara and spaghetti, and then you mix them up if you want. But a lot of times, meatballs are a course, and you'll just get, you know, you'll share a platter of meatballs on your way to something else. And that's a little known fact.
But
we're in America, baby, and sketty and meatballs, it's a staple in our country, and but please, and you can take your meatballs and throw them right in the sauce raw and cook them that way. That's one way. But me, I think they're juicier. They get that crust on the outside of the meatball, and they're juicier inside. That's my approach, and that's my recommendation.
Do you serve them? So you serve them in a bowl separately from the marinara sauce?
I don't. I in the restaurant, what I'll do is I'll take a little spoon of marinara sauce and mix it in with the spaghetti. So it's all coated, the spaghetti, not a lot.
Right.
That's a pet peeve of mine, is too much marinara sauce on spaghetti. because then it's the spaghetti swims in it, and you don't want to do that. And then I'd put the meatballs on the top of the spaghetti with a little bit of the sauce, and then I'd take a ladle of sauce and pour it over the meatballs, and it drizzles down into the spaghetti.
Got it.
But you want you definitely when you're making spaghetti, you always want to take a little sauce and mix it in with the spaghetti before you put it on the platter. And then you could have a gravy bowl just a bowl with a ladle in it with a lot of sauce in it, and then your platter of meatballs, or meatballs and sausages, and then you can have at it. That's the ultimate way for me to eat that dish. Because there's one thing that I hate is when I order spaghetti and meatballs and it comes out and I barely see the spaghetti because it's so covered with tomato sauce.
Tomato sauce.
Or tomato and meat mixed up together. It's too much for me. And when I lived in Italy, I learned that lesson. I said, you want to taste the pasta, a-hole. you don't want to bury your pasta, because over there, most of theirs is handmade anyway. But even the dry noodles here, you don't want to inundate them with too much sauce. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Here's another one. Mac, what does the chef serve with biscotti? He's quoting you, making fun of me. That's how kids say it.
I said it for a long time. Spaghetti. Biscotti. Biscotti.
What do you...
Here's what I serve with that spaghetti and meat sauce or spaghetti and meatballs or whatever in the heck you want to do. I serve garlic bread. Now, in Italy, you're not supposed to eat bread with pasta. But I don't go there. I like garlic bread to sop everything up with. And the fact that you have you take a baguette, a loaf of French bread.
Right.
And your mom does a beautiful job where she slices like a loaf of bread and then garlic butter in between and Parmesan on top.
Well, she evolved that to slice it horizontally. And
yes.
And then, you know, Kathleen believed in a lot of butter. And
yes.
Right. She did not like to see black, like, burn on the bread. And if you coated it with, you know, with butter, what you tended to get was like the golden brown thing. She did not like the bread looking black. And then as she evolved, she then began to cover that with just your Parmesan cheese out of the green shaker. And so
Kraft shaker.
It would be butter, then with garlic salt with parsley, and then with Parmesan on top of that. And let me just tell you. And then, unlike much of what I do in the kitchen, you got to sit there and watch it when you stick, you know, the loaf. Now, it's horizontally cut in two, right? And you can, her deal was she would turn the broiler on, but she would initially stick the bread, you know, at the lowest spot in the oven. And that allowed the butter to melt and everything to kind of blend together and all that for a little while. And then she would take it and when she was ready to just finish browning and then pull it out, she would elevate that. Right? She would elevate that. So that was the art form. And let me tell you, the bread is to die for. It's to die for.
Now my rendition is I'll take a baguette, a loaf of French bread, cut it lengthwise. And then I've got two halves, doubling my plaster. And then I'll take a serrated edge, and I'll cut down about a quarter of an inch into the bread every couple of inches. And then I have a garlic and butter mixed, and I lather that bread unbelievably with the garlic butter. And then I will.
Let me ask you this: do you blend that concoction before you put it on, and so the garlic will already, as opposed to the way my mom did it? Okay.
Yeah, you have to, and then the garlic will permeate the butter.
Got it.
And so it reaches every nook and cranny.
Got it.
And then you spread it, and just like covering a sandwich, you leave no edge uncovered. You spread it from shit tip to stern, and then I cover it with any grated Parmesan cheese, a pretty good dose of that all over, and then I kind of pat it down a little bit because that'll be a crust and it'll also shrink into the bread, and then when it comes out, you throw a little paprika and parsley on it, and then serve it up, and because it's cut about a quarter of an inch or so, their sections are easy to break off for if you have more than yourself or one other person. But and that's what I serve with my pasta dishes.
Okay, do you
that's
serve,
what I like to serve.
Most people, most of the times when I see pasta served, it's also served with salad.
Yes.
Antipasto, so yep. do you have a preference for salad or vegetable or anything like that when you serve it?
I just like to serve oil and vinegar, balsamic vinegar and olive oil.
Got it.
And then all kinds of sliced vegetables. Like I love cucumbers in salad, maybe a little raw onion, mushrooms. You can throw some artichokes in there, olives, and that's it. I don't want to get any heavy dressings on it. I like to keep it light and don't over, just like the pasta, don't put too much dressing on your lettuce leaf, lettuce, and you can use anywhere from iceberg to romaine or green leaf. I like a mixture of all three of them. I'm not a fan of the mixed greens, the artsy craftsy little lettuce.
All right.
I like a little more substantial lettuce. And, iceberg was invented for McDonald's for their burgers, and there's no nutritional value. But you can't beat the crunch of an iceberg lettuce like in a wedge salad. So I like to mix that in with romaine and green leaf, which are both very nutritious. And then I love artichoke hearts, and I love onions and olives and cucumbers. And that's it. I wouldn't put any cheese in there either. If I'm having pasta, because you've got Parmesan cheese. And you can sprinkle a little Parm on your salad if you so desire.
Iceberg lettuce was developed in 1895 by the Burpee Seed Company. It's just one variety of crisp head lettuce, but arguably the most iconic. Its name comes from the way lettuce was originally packed and transported on crushed ice, making the heads look like icebergs, noted so-and-so and so-and-so. Now, this is a little bit more in-depth. Let's see. Iceberg lettuce boycott. Iceberg lettuce until the 1930s was known as crisp head lettuce.
Yeah.
Bruce Church, founder of Fresh Express, was responsible for popularizing the idea of shipping lettuce across the U.S. Across the continent from Salinas, California, to spots on the East Coast using ice they carefully cover the heads of lettuce and ship them year round and all the way as far as Maine. As the train pulled up to each stop, folks would call out excitedly, "The icebergs are coming. The icebergs are coming." The name stuck. Before that, the people had to depend they grew locally in their gardens.
Uh-huh. Yes. That's cool. That's good information.
How interesting.
Very cool. Yeah, I love it.
I'm looking for a reference. Anyway, iceberg lettuce. Now, it's one of the things that I like about this show is food history. A friend of mine, I'm headed to Sonny's Pizza in San Clemente for an early lunch after listening to you two talk about Italian food. Sonny's Pizza, or Sonny's,
yes,
in San Clemente, I mean, they bring lasagna to your plate, to your table, and it's still bubbling.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Come on. It's the best. Right? It's the best. Let's see. Chef is off the chain. This is better than the Food Network because he is just painting a picture in my mind. I would have loved to have eaten at his restaurant. I enjoyed the story about him chucking a spear at some drunken college dude as well. That was classic. Yeah, if you missed that, dig up last week's broadcast and you'll hear the story of – the story is about, a steel staircase or iron staircase was attached to where Kim lived for a while, at least when I met him. And then but there was always something crazy that was going on the staircase because it was in an alley. There was bars backed up to it. And so I asked him, what was the craziest? So if you go listen to last week's broadcast, he tells a story about throwing a spear he had for decorative purposes in his home at somebody. And the police, good thing you were a respectable citizen in the community, or you might have gotten in trouble for that.
Oh, well, I could have gotten in trouble had I released it my first pump. But I held back, and I thought better, and I said, I just got to try and trip him up. And sure did. I threw it towards his ankles, and it hit the step, and then skipped in front of him, and then he stumbled over the spear and knocked the other two guys down.
Oh my
God. The expression in his face, on his eyes, when I had that spear cocked that first time, he was just pure terror.
Yeah,
that was worth the whole price of admission myself.
You're really not supposed to see that in North Dakota, just for the record.
No, you're not.
Just so everybody knows, a little bit from out of the blue, from Dave. This is food porn. I love it. It's the secret why there are now so many, shows about food, right? And much food technology. We're just talking about what air frying, right? Is something now. And you hear that stuff, you're like, what? And, so all the different technology that's all devoted to, cooking food. So interesting stuff. Here's another one. Mac, does the chef have a favorite dish that was on his menu? So on your Sanders menu, if you could only order one thing, what would you order?
It would probably be the grilled ribeye with béarnaise and French fries.
That's how I got introduced. I walked into his office one night. I said I'd come down and visit on a Wednesday night, and I came through the alley. I walked in the back door. He was in there eating. I sat down in the chair, and I said, "What are you eating?" He said, "I'm eating the ribeye." And I looked at it, and it had what? Béarnaise sauce?
Yes.
And it had, so it was the ribeye with, how did you treat the onions? They were kind of floured and fried, right?
They're shaved real thin, the onions. They're dusted in a mixture of flour and cornmeal. Then they're thrown in a basket, they're shaken off, and then dropped in a deep fryer. So they're like crispy onions. And it takes about maybe a minute, minute and a half to cook. And they come out, and you put them on the in a tray on some paper and drain any oil that's on them. And then throw them on top of the steak. You don't want thick onions. You just want them, you know.
Yeah, these were
thin.
No, these were not. These were the texture of, well, I wouldn't even say that, a very thin calamari.
Yes.
Very thin, but so yeah, that's how I discovered really the ribeye steak.
Yes.
And the delicious nature. And I looked at him and he looked at me because he saw me staring at the steak. He goes, "Do you want one?" I said, "Yeah." So he said, "Hold on." So we went through a while, I think before I went to Afghanistan, where we would have we would have lunch every Wednesday night. Because
yeah.
Kim was a busy guy, I was a busy guy. We'd do the show on Friday, but we didn't have as much time to hang out. And then we started having lunch on Thursday afternoon too. So
yep.
It was easier when I worked downtown. But we used to have fun and sitting in Kim's back office. And then there'd be people sometimes in his restaurant. We'd go out and visit. He'd go out and do his thing, and he'd say, "Hold on, let me go get Mac." And he'd come back and goes, "Come on, there's somebody I want you to see." So I'd go out, and there'd be a friend of ours, and we'd sit down at the table and have a good time. So it was, my family, and John had his rehearsal dinner at Kim's joint. John worked there for 10 years. Patrick worked there for a couple
yep.
years. So it was... when my kids think of, you know, the warmest places they have in their lives, Kim's restaurant was one of them. And I would tell you, I've said this before, but that place, it was beautiful. It was wood and wooden wood with brass. And then, you know, Kim and Beth have this incredible art collection that was all over the place. He'd have live music on Friday and Saturdays. I think Friday and Saturday, right? Or just Friday?
Yep, correct.
And again, you could go in there in a tuxedo and have dinner, or you could roll in a pair of shorts in the summer, and you would feel just as comfortable. And he had great, you know, help in there. They were all good people and all fun, and made going in there awesome. And so I would tell you, between Minneapolis and Seattle. Right, you're talking to the former owner of the best restaurant in there for a long, long period of time. And
thank you.
Oh no,
thank
I mean you. It's just a fact, right? When Dennis Miller rolls out like, "Hey, I just had a meal at Sanders," in the middle of his routine, right?
Yeah.
When Dennis Miller did that, you're like, "Oh my God," right? Hey, that joint Sanders, man. And you know this isn't, right? What'd he say? "And you know, and I paid for the meal, so you know this isn't solicited."
Yeah, he did too. Paid for a meal, and he was a generous tipper too.
He was. No, and so, you know, Dennis Miller coming to Grand Forks, North Dakota, right? And he was, that was him when he was doing his show, and, you know, and he was, you know, he's a big deal. And so his wife
was with him, and also her mom, his mother-in-law.
Yeah.
The three of them.
If you've never heard it, here it is.
Oh, and by the way, Sanders, one of the best restaurants I've eaten at the last 10 years of my life. Huh? Have you been down to that joint? I just had an astounding meal there, and I actually paid, so you know this is sincere.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there, Susan and I were sitting there, and you're like, holy shit, right? You can't pay for that, and you heard everybody cheer, like, "Yeah, what's up?" So it was like, Kimmy, holy shit. But, yeah. So
well,
the ribeye.
That person who hasn't eaten my food, I am involved in another restaurant in Grand Forks. God forbid you ever get caught here or in the winter, or if you're passing through, starting next July, it's a restaurant called Harry's, and it's on Demers, Main Street through town off of I-29, and Harry's on Demers, and it's right downtown in the middle of downtown on 5th and Demers, and I'm doing a 1940s-style steakhouse. So it's the decor. I'm consulting with the owner of the joint, Hal Gershman, who's a friend of both Max and mine. And he asked me to consult and do the menu and train the staff in the kitchen and the wait staff. And my kind of training is more like going into the Marines than it is being a hoity-toity waiter or a stuck-up server. I mean, it's serious business. It's an honored profession, and I take it seriously. So if you're coming through town, it'll be a dinner house only. It's only going to be 90 seats, 10 seats at the bar. It's all going to be leather upholstered, tuck and rolled seats. It's going to be really pretty.
Whoa.
So, and I can't wait for you, when you do your series in Grand Forks. I hope it's this summer.
We're going to
dine there, and yeah. I can't wait to treat you to dinner.
Wow. No, I'd love to. And, there's another one. Okay, so that's your favorite entree.
Yeah.
Favorite hors d'oeuvre and favorite dessert. My favorite entree was one that they would make special for me, because I told you that Kim got pissed at me when I asked if could I, because my son, right, used to bitch about people that would order off the menu, and as all waiters do. And so I was sensitive to that. So one night I asked Kim, hey, would you mind if, and he just stared at me. And I said, like, what? And he said, look, this is a restaurant. You're the customer. How can I make this experience good for you? What do you want to eat? I'm like, don't say it like that. He said, order what you want. That's what I do. All right? Don't ever ask me a stupid question like that again. And I was like, damn, why are you getting all butch in my face all of a sudden? And, but he was serious about that. And so my favorite meal that they would make was a little piece of ribeye, right? Garlic mashed potatoes, a little piece of, and a little piece of crab cake and two scampi with some asparagus and garlic mashed potatoes.
Yes.
That was my own like Mac mix grill. 'Cause they had a mixed seafood grill that had, I think, scallops, right?
Scallops, crab cake, scampi, and whatever the fish of the week was.
Yeah.
Four pieces different, and all with different sauces.
Yeah, it was delicious. And so, but I like the ribeye. So I made Max Mix Grill, and Kim would. But that was my favorite. Your favorite hors d'oeuvre that you served at your place?
Oh, it would definitely be the crab cake. Yeah, the Maryland crab cakes.
I love the calamari, but let me tell you, this is so the McNamara family would roll in there, right? And my fucking sons, man, if they came to dinner with us, good God, man, they would like, okay, stop, you can have one. Like, what? Like, yeah, you can't have like six. Okay, this is an hors d'oeuvre, okay? It's not your main course. Yeah, so taking those son of a bitches to dinner, good God. But anyway, the shrimp cocktail was what size? Because the shrimp were big shrimp. They were good shrimp, right? And Kim's cocktail sauce had kick to it. So it was delicious. So we would order, the McNamara family would order A couple of shrimp cocktails and a couple of orders of calamari so we could all have some. And hopefully my sons weren't with us so we could, the rest of us could eat. And and John would be working most of the time, so he was not a question. Yeah. It was a question with Patrick. And so, but that's how we started. And then occasionally, if I wasn't going to have crab cake for dinner, then I would say, hey, how about a crab cake too? But those were my three. I would be hard pressed to pick one, but I love the calamari.
Yeah, and my favorite dessert was the creme caramel. And that's a custard that's made with egg yolks, heavy whipping cream, vanilla bean, and a little caramel sauce that's in the bottom of the pan of the dish you cook it in. So when you flip it over, that caramel sauce runs down over the creme caramel. And then you add a little whipped cream and fresh fruit. And we have this in the recipe bank at allmarineradio.com. So you want a fabulous dessert, and it's pretty much for, it holds a week. So you can make it 3 or 4 days ahead, and it'll be just as good. And you have to let them sit overnight in the fridge to set up. But you bake them in a water bath.
That's delicious.
At 300 degrees for an hour. Anyway, the recipes, I'm pretty sure it's in the archives.
No, trust me, it is. It is. All you have to do is you go to the read board, right? So now on I like the way you like rolled into the All Marine Radio website, Kim. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Like you've
done. That's true.
like you've done it before. It's on the allmarineradio.com website. Whoa! What the fuck just happened, man? The guy just became a pro. So if
I forget stuff, I got to look it up.
So if you go to now the Read Board blog and click on that, you'll see a whole bunch of stuff, right? You'll see my mom's carrot casserole, and then you'll see. You'll see a picture of Kim, and he's standing there in his lab coat in front of at his bar with a whole bunch of bottles behind it. Click on that. It says the All Marine Radio Head Chef's Cookbook, Kim and Beth Holmes. So if you click on that, it takes you to the entry, and all you got to do is scroll down, and it says just click here, and you'll find all the recipes that we've talked about on this program. You'll find all that stuff there. And I would encourage you, right? Don't be afraid, whether it's prime rib, whether it's salmon sandwiches, whether it's all the different things that are on there, check it out. But creme caramel, it is my kids, those pigs, they would eat the shit out of it, right? And it's just, it had, what was that, custard, right?
Yes.
And then the caramel, you know, what would you even call that? I would call it, I'd call it sauce, but I know that's not what you would call it.
Well, no, it's what it is. What you do for that is you take a couple cups of water and a cup of brown sugar. You dissolve it, kind of bring it to just below boil point so all the sugar is dissolved.
Right.
And there's your sauce. And you put about an ounce in each cup that before you ladle creme caramel in. It kind of looks like it's going to come up, but it settles in the bottom. So when you're done and ready to serve, you flip the dish upside down, that caramel plops out, and the top part is kind of brown from the brown sugar, and then the caramel sauce runs on down the sides. It's primo. And it's a very fancy dessert and very easy to make. And they're going to think, who is this person cooking my dessert?
Yeah. I want to start with this.
But then you put a little fresh fruit, strawberries, blueberries.
Kiwis, blueberries.
Kiwis. Yeah, and let me just tell you, the combination of the fresh fruit with the custard and the sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we would order it, and all my kids would grab their spoons. And I'm like, I'm like, this
That's
isn't
true.
This isn't
That's so true.
This isn't for you. And they'd be like, what? Oh, yes, it is, Dad. I'm like, all right, well, maybe we should get a second one because no, we would share it, but no, absolutely delicious. But again, the fresh fruit right at the end of the meal, it was awesome. So, yeah, that was by far. But I have other people who would testify about Beth's key lime pie.
Yeah, yeah. She makes a killer key lime.
Right, right. And the other thing that was always awesome was, you know, you rolled in and the bread was baked fresh daily. So, you know, you're sitting there, get with your drink and looking at the menu, looking at appetizers and the thing and you know, freshly baked bread with butter would be there, and that was good too. So no, it was cool. And then with Uncle Mountain rolling around the whole time, right? Saying hi to everybody.
Yeah, I love my restaurants. Yeah. I mean, I've always, all my crew that have their own restaurants now, I've always told them, you're the competitive edge. You're the one that has to get out there and mix it up with the guests and have a good time and do what it has to be. And, you know, when you walk up to a table, you can tell whether they want to engage or they want you to get the F away. You know, they could be arguing. You got to be kind of tuned in to what's going on in your joint. But it's so much fun, and I'm looking forward. I'm going to have the best of both worlds in this new joint because I don't own it. The only thing I regret is I can't cook all the meals. I just don't have the chops anymore with my bad back and stuff. But it's still, I'm going to be in there a lot at night and work in the room. And that's what Hal wants me to do. And it's going to be fun. I'm very much looking forward to it. And it gives me a little juice at the end of the road, you know, on the back nine now. So it's fun. I'm digging it.
No, if you had ever seen Kim rolling through his joint, you would. Everybody loved it because he's a fun guy. He's a happy guy. And, you know, and he did it for how many years? How many years did you own your restaurant there?
Well, Sanders, it was over 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. I mean, so Kim, I mean, there was generations of kids who grew up in that community when they were little. You know, they'd go down there with their mom and dad, you know, then they'd go down there with dates and on proms. And then, you know, after they got married and had their own families, they were taking their kids in there. And so it was one of the anchors of a community. And Kim was the Mayor McCheese of the whole event. So it was cool to
truly fun.
Yeah, the metropolitan statistical area, probably about 100,000 people between the two cities and then the people that lived around it. And his joint was the joint, and people, you know, would roll in and they would have heard about it. They'd come from different parts of the state. And to eat there, and again, when you live in small town America, restaurants like that are regional destinations, and Kim's was one of those, and it was fun. But again, for me and my family, right, between our sons working there, between knowing all the guys who work there, and then Kim coming and hanging out with us in the back corner of the restaurant and laughing and how much our kids loved that. It was like the Magic Kingdom, the happiest place on earth. And, right. No,
oh, thank you, Matt.
No, the kid, and when the kids knew, like, hey, we're going to go to Sanders tonight, they would, like, the girls would, Catherine is still scarred by the experience. She's a ribs and potato girl. by virtue of her time in North Dakota. And, I mean, she loved Kim's ribs. Loved them.
Yeah, and she would get it. We did pork ribs, and then we did buffalo ribs.
Buffalo ribs.
And the buffalo ribs were great. And we had two different type of barbecue sauces. And it was fun. It was fun. But I'm going to flip back real quick to the cocktail sauce for the shrimp cocktail and give everyone a little heads up. Now, my shrimp cocktail sauce, and I know this is in the book, allmarineradio.com, is the key is half horseradish, a quarter ketchup, and a quarter of your favorite barbecue sauce, and then lemon juice to kind of soften it and bring it all together. But the key is that quarter of your favorite barbecue sauce. And I used my barbecue sauce in that shrimp cocktail. But get a great horseradish. The hotter, the better.
Well, okay, so let me, because we've had discussions about horseradish, right? Are you talking about horseradish sauce or?
I'm talking about ground horseradish in a jar. You can get in the refrigeration section of your local deli or grocery store.
Whoa. So you're talking about
not sauce at all. No, there's no sour cream or anything blended. It's just horseradish, and that's it, baby. and it makes it burns your hair on your nose if you smell
it. But it wasn't.
But with the ketchup and the barbecue sauce and the lemon juice, it mellows it out to where you have the thunder, but you can still taste things. It just, horseradish, that initial hit of heat goes away, but it's that first bite with the shrimp dunked in the horseradish sauce. Oh my God, you're in the front row. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, no. All right. So your money is on Kansas City, but your heart is on the 49ers, yes?
Yeah, for sure. Well, we had I told you a story about going to the 49er games at Kezar last week. And that's, I mean, I've kind of been a closet 49er fan since then. That was in 1965 through 70. Yeah. I loved it. I loved the 49ers. And then my buddy Dayton John Brody, the quarterback's kid sister, I mean, and getting to hang out, it was fun. And Kezar Stadium, if you're ever in Golden Gate Park, I don't know if they tore it down or not, but it's a stadium that goes out. It, you know, today's stadiums go like from the ground level straight up pretty much. You know, they're real high and tight. This one is kind of spread out. And for some reason, you could hear the guys hitting on the field and cussing, and it was great. And then we sat in the end zone. So, yeah, I'm a secret 49er fan, but Disco picked them. So it's going to be a great game regardless.
Right. Well, hopefully. I mean, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. But it'll be, everybody says the matchup is, you know, the 49er defense against Patrick Mahomes, who's put it up on everybody. So we'll see if. But I will tell you this, as a 49er fan, we've sucked for a long time. And I can tell you that there was years that with Joe Montana, with Steve Young, that you're like, you know, winning was important. Winning's not so important this year. To be there, the turnaround that team has done, and they have a good young team is very exciting if you're a 49ers fan. So, but to get that far and not win, certainly painful. But if you're a 49er fan, the story is what a turnaround and much more fun to watch them win and be competitive than to get their asses kicked all over the place. So Sunday should be fun. But I'm headed to Las Vegas on Sunday. And
Yeah,
no, I'm
You're going to be in the middle of that?
Well, no, probably not. Probably not. I will, I'm going to do my thing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for the Clark County Fire Department, which is the Las Vegas Fire Department. And can't tell you how excited I am after, you know, they still deal with the fallout from you know, their mass shooting.
That shooting.
So I was.
Where are they putting you up? Hopefully not the Mandalay Bay.
No, I don't know. I'm not a Vegas guy, so I don't. Just for me to make it easy, someplace close to the training facility. So I've got to figure out where that is. So then we will see. We will see about all of that. So
wow, way to go, Mac. That's awesome. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you're going to be talking to them.
All day.
That's huge.
Every member of the Las Vegas Fire Department is going to go through it. So, and again, what I'm excited about, Kim, is that one, it's the first responder organization in the nation that will see it. And the message of post-traumatic winning is one that I believe enables people that have lived through significant trauma. But what I'm envious of, you know, as a former Marine, is that, you know, as a Marine, you're kind of segregated from, you know, the community. You go to work on a base, you live there, you work there. You know, you may live out in the community, but these guys are exalted members of the community. They're first responders. They're firefighters.
Yes.
And they come in contact with people every day that, you know, have been through tough things. And so that means you're going to have access to people who can benefit from this kind of information, that there is nothing wrong with you, that you can live a great life. And so what that means is every person whose life you touch, that becomes a bit of joy you bring into your own life. And so I talk about converting trauma to joy, and that's really not true because you can never convert it. What you live with your traumatic events your whole life. But the secret to this is as you touch the lives of other people, right, and you bring this joy into your life that you get from seeing, you know, the sun come out, the clouds part, and them get it about living a great life, right?
Yes.
Every time you do that, you overwhelm your traumatic experiences with joyful ones, and pretty soon you don't even feel the burden that you bear. You know, your shoulders get stronger, your back gets thicker, your neck gets thicker, and it's an incredible thing. And I'm so excited because they're going to have that opportunity, right? To understand themselves about where they're at and what it takes, but also to touch their community and turn these terrible events, use that hole that it creates in your life, you turn it into a trampoline and you vault yourself to a place that you didn't know existed. And so I can't tell you how, you can obviously tell how excited I am,
Cool. You just told me.
I'm a little bit geeked about it. So anyway, so I'll go up there Sunday at some point and then be up there next week. So really looking forward to that. So that's awesome.
Okay. Same time, next station, next week.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well,
are you going to be home?
I will be home, but I got to do my thing on Friday. So we'll probably have to record something on Thursday.
Okay, that's all right.
All right. Well, that's good.
Whatever you want to do, man, I'm here for you.
That showbiz, baby.
You bet you believe it.
All right, man. I will talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. It was a great day.
All right. There you have it. The one and only P. Kimball Holmes here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. So that'll do it. Don't touch that dial. Hour one, we're going to talk about a Gallup poll out in which out of 28 categories, Americans are either neutral or positive on 23 of them. So a pretty surprising poll number. And I will tell you this, that when the economy goes well and people are working, I think that's what is indicative. And I will tell you what, given the treaty signed with China, given the treaty signed with Mexico and Canada, there's good reason in the country to be optimistic. And I think the president has every intention of negotiating the same type of agreement with the European Union. American products can't have the shit taxed out of them, right? And then you have access to our markets. That can't be a one-way street. So anyway, so we talk about that. And a whole bunch of interesting stuff in the news. Also talk about in hour one, something I watched yesterday, and that is a program on the Mean Lai Massacre. It happened 2 years ago. It was done by the Center for Strategic International Studies, CSIS. And it was awesome. 50 years later, you had lawyers there, you had scholars there talking about it. And I learned a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't know. And you'll probably hear that at some point in the next couple of weeks. So always interesting. And you'll hear about a little bit about that. And then we check the news. So have a great weekend. You'll hear the show all next week. Yeah. And it should be on time. I've done some software engineering and that I've been experimenting with in the last 4 weeks to get it right so that I can record stuff and it fires on a schedule. So we'll see if it works. I'm pretty sure it does. So anyway, so looking forward to it. So we'll you'll hear Grant Newsham. You'll hear Mark Cancian, retired colonel, United States Marine Corps, and talking about the Marine Corps' new pivot to wherever we're going to pivot to. And I'm not sure that Alex Hollings can be able to join us because of his schedule. If not, you'll hear him the following Monday. So, and the chef will be with us next week, as he always is. So, anyway, have a great weekend. Good luck to the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And I think I'm headed to Sonny's tonight now that Napa Man mentioned it. That wouldn't be a bad idea. And as always, going out the door, don't be afraid to change somebody's life. There's so many, in particular young people, that are alone, don't think you understand. And whenever you have the opportunity to look at them and say, hey, could I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you, right? You know you're okay. That what you're going through is absolutely normal for what you've been through. And you can do this. And I want to show you something. Come here. That's how you live the high life, man. Touch the lives of other people. It's the coolest shit going. So, with that said, on a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and out.